Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Albader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Carlos, my Indians are still alive in the World Series. They're leading the Cubbies 3-2. They could clinch with a win tonight in Cleveland. Speaking of the World Series, the Cubs and the Indians, Game 5, outdrew the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday night. That is really big news, Carlos. No one outdraws the Cowboys or the NFL. The times, they are changing. We also had some big doings in the golf world last week. Another rookie won on the PGA Tour. Hideki Matsuyama won the big tournament in China. And the Champions Tour began their playoffs with a win by Tom Pernice. We have a ton of golf to talk about tonight, so let's go.
Let's go. We have a lot to talk about. And, hey, you don't want to miss our great topic. It's going to be on the practice bench. We're going to talk about the previews on what's going on the big races now at the end of the season. And, like you mentioned, we are going to have a great guest today. His name is Joshua Jacobs, CEO of PGA, so you don't want to miss that. But, hey, let's start right away with the weekend backspin, and I'm more than glad to say that Japan's Hideki Matsuyama is the WGC HSBC champion after he cruised to a 7-shot victory over Daniel Berger and Henrik Stenson at Sheshin International in Shanghai. Hideki Matsuyama, he began the final day of the year's last WGC event 3-clear of the chasing pack, and the gap was never closer than that on Sunday. And the young Japanese star opened with a birdie and made further gains at the fifth and seventh holes. He reached a turn 4-clear of the field. He made 3 straight birdies from the 13th to move 8 ahead, and he was able to cruise home for a comfortable win. The 24-year-old spoke after about what a significant achievement this was in his career. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about that later. But Open champion Henrik Stenson of Sweden, he closed with an excellent 65 to climb into a share of second place with Daniel Berger of the U.S. Rory McIlroy finished the week in a share of fourth with Bill Haas and Ricky Fowler, claiming a share of sixth place with Francesco Molinari and Ross Fisher. Running up the top 10, Russell Knox had been just 3 behind with 1 round to go, but he faded with a 74 on Sunday and ended up tied for ninth with Sergio Garcia. Emiliano Grillo finished 11th. Red hot players Alex Noren and Paul Casey shared 12th, and Adam Scott and Thomas Peters tied for 14th. Other notables were Dustin Johnson, T35, Noah Watson, T54, Patrick Reed, T60, Danny Willett, T75, and Jimmy Walker, 2 spots behind him in a tie for last. They have 3 talking points from the WGC HSBC champions, and number 1, of course, who else? Hideki Matsuyama. You know, he is the first Asian golfer to win a World Golf Championship event, and he's just the 2nd Japanese player to win on the European Tour, following Isao Aoki's European Open win in 1983. Matsuyama has collected a staggering $2.376 million in prize money in an 8-day whirl after second place in Kuala Lumpur last week and the Shanghai win this past weekend. But he said on Sunday all he wanted to do was bring his parents back home in Japan. He said in the post-tournament interview that he knew why Yi Yang won the PGA Championship and actually was surprised when they announced that he was the first Asian to win a WGC event. He confessed he was really nervous at the start of the day, but he was able to birdie hole number 1 and kind of got himself into the rhythm of the day, and after that, it was smooth sailing. He also added, and I quote, "Winning today, I feel, has got me closer to being able to compete a lot better in the major tournaments. My next goal is, of course, to win a major, and I'm going to do all that I can to prepare well for that, end of quote. Watch out for Hideki in 2017. I said it some time ago when he won the Memorial that he had the tools to be one of the top players in the world. And when he defeated Ricky Fowler at the Waste Management earlier this year in that epic showdown in the desert, that the Big Four could have been to expand it to a Big Five to include him, of course. DJ now entered the picture to make it a Big Five, but now with two wins and a second place in his last three starts, he has rose to the career high number 6 in the world in the new rankings that were released yesterday. So we might be looking at a Big Six soon. Hey, golf hierarchy is expanding. His victory in Shanghai means he already leads at the 2017 USPGA Tour FedEx Cup points standings. The HSBC Champions was his 10th victory worldwide, and he's third on the PGA Tour since turning professional in August of 2013, equaling Shigeki Maruyama's record for the most PGA Tour wins in history by a Japanese player, and he's only 24. The second point that I have is by finishing second in the tie for second place, Henrik Stenson now has taken the lead on the Race to Dubai standings with just 3 events left on the 2016 European Tour season. The Swede is now 261,000 points clear of Masters champion Danny Willett, and we all know how good Henrik Stenson plays in this part of the year, and especially in Dubai, which he practically owns. And finally, but not least, Rory McIlroy has closed up also on Danny Willett on the Race to Dubai standings. He finished with a 66 in China to move up into a share for 4th place at the end of the week. But he said that he wasn't necessarily looking for a win, but looking to give himself a chance to win the big prize in Dubai. Unfortunately, he withdrew, and we were going to talk a little bit about that, from the Turkish Airlines Open. So right now it's a little bit on hold, his chances to win the Race to Dubai, and he admitted to that today. So, Fred, unfortunately for Rory, it is, but hey, right now he said that he admits Danny and Henry have had better season. They were major champions, and he would be happy with that.
Yeah, Rory hasn't had too bad of a year. I think he got that little $10 million thing a couple weeks ago. You know, the big thing here, you know, it brings out a point, Carlos, that when these young guys don't win right away, they maybe get a little anxious. Hideki Matsuyama popped up on the scene, you know, when he did well at the Masters as an amateur. And, you know, he was right at the top at the WTC Bridgestone several years ago. We've been watching him. You've been talking about him. He's been coming along. He's had a few wins on the PGA Tour. But this is really a big win for him. And, you know, it's taken, you know, what, 4 or 5 years to get to this point. And he's a really good player. So, you know, we expect a lot of these young kids out of the box a lot of times. And sometimes it just takes a little longer. The other thing was Jimmy Walker finished last in the field, I guess. He was not too happy. I guess he was seen breaking clubs. So Jimmy's not playing up to form right now. Hey, Carlos, while the big names were over in China, there was a tournament at Sanderson Farms here in Mississippi. Didn't we see this movie last year? A rookie graduates from Web.com Tour and wins on the PGA Tour. Last year, Emiliano Grillo, Smiley Kaufman, and Justin Thomas won their first events on the PGA Tour in the fall series right after coming off the Web.com Tour. Well, this year, Texan Cody Gribble just earned his 2017 PGR card via the Web.com Tour, and he immediately goes out and hits the jackpot in Mississippi by winning the $718,000 for the first place in the Sanderson Farm Championship. Gribble has spent 2 years on the Web.com Tour. In 49 starts, he had 0 wins and only 7 top tens. He made nearly twice as much money in 2015 than this year, but it was not good enough to make it to the PGA Tour. In 24 events this year on the Web.com, Gribble had 2 top 10 finishes, only 2. A runner-up at the United Leasing way back in May, but he posted a top 5 in the Nationwide Children's Hospital Championship in the Web.com Tour Finals, and that was good enough to earn one of the final 25 cards. He finished T8 at the Safeway Open to earn $186,000 a couple weeks ago, so in his last 2 PGA Tour starts, he's earned close to $1 million. Gribble kept his foot on the gas, buying rounds of 73, 63,
67-65 to beat Greg Owen, Luke List, and Chris Kirk by four shots. Ian Poulter was in the field trying to get back to form. After a T-17 finish last week at the CIMB in Malaysia, he missed the cut here in Mississippi. The PGA Tour heads to the bright lights of Las Vegas this week for the Shriners Hospitals for Children Open. And a funny story came out. I have to put this in. They're slightly overbooked. Steve Karp of the Las Vegas Review Journal reports that the PGA Tour will play a 144-player field instead of the 132-player field the tournament sponsor requested. With the sunrise to sunset window of 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. and the speed of play, the way it's going, the tournament has very little chance of finishing the first two rounds by Friday evening. The Shriners Open had petitioned the tour in December last year to reduce the tournament field from 144 to 132 in hopes of not having to play to have spillover on the following day. The tour agreed, but a clerical error failed to have the reduction to 132 put into the tour's computer. When players and agents started looking and playing at Las Vegas, it was with a 144-player field in mind. Once the tour realized the mistake, there's nothing they can do. Going to be a little crowded on the course of TPC Summerlin this week. Both the guys with late tee times on Friday booked a room for an extra night, Carlos.
If I have learned something by working with technology, is that the system doesn't make the mistake. What goes in is what goes out. So I'll just leave it there without trying to imply anything from the PGA Tour. I'll leave it there. But anyway, there was action also of the ladies tennis and the LPGA. China's Chang Chang Fang became the first two-time winner of the Senior Derby LPGA Classic after claiming victory by three strokes at TPC Kuala Lumpur on Sunday. Fang, who has been red hot this second half of the year, followed up her win here in 2014 by carding a 4-under 67 for a total of 17 under in claiming her first title on the LPGA Tour this year. She has now finished either first or second for four consecutive years at the $1.8 million tournament. The victory, her fifth of her career, is also a culmination of a run of top five finishes in as many tournaments as Thong underlined her status as the most informed golfer at the moment. Play was delayed for 4 hours 39 minutes by lightning and periods of heavy rain, leaving only 90 minutes of light left when the action resumed. Lightning and rain also suspended play Friday afternoon. They were playing TPC Kuala Lumpur's East Course a week after Justin Thomas successfully defended his title on the West Course in the PGA Tour's CIMB Classic. In a valiant effort that fell short, Norway's Suzanne Pedersen completed a 5-under-66 to finish alone in the second place, while Sweden's Anna Nordqvist, who started in the final round, two shots behind Fong, bogey the 18th for 70, fell into a tie for third with South Korean Amy Yang, the leader after the first and second days. Soyeon Ryu and Asahara Munoz finished tied for fifth at 11 under. Hana Yang ran in 4 birdies in a row in 5 holes and to edge within a stroke of the lead by the 6th hole, but 5 bogeys under the next 6 holes. So the South Korean slide down the leaderboard to finish 9 strokes off the pace. Well, number one, Lydia Ko of New Zealand went around in an even par to finish tied for 12th with Hana, and level with last year's winner, also Jessica Korda. Sweden's Pernilla Lindberg aced a par 317th for the shot of the tournament, the only hole-in-one of the week in a round of 71. She started and ended her Asia tour with holes in one. Kelly Tan was the best performer of the 9 Malaysians in the field after finishing joint 58th with a 4-over 75, while 16-year-old amateur Ashley Lau was the next best at 19 and 296. Putting professionals Michelle Koh and Jin Shaw were in the shade missing the cut. Other notables, Paula Creamer had a solid week. After a third round of 64 Saturday, she fired 68 on Sunday and finished T9. Charlie Hall, T12, Beach Hill Lee, T27, Stacey Lewis, T33, Aria Yutanavan, T43, and Woodard Hernison, P63, I'm sorry about this. But now, the story on the two big races on the LPGA. Lydia Ko moved back ahead of Arya Jatanarain in the race to win the LPGA money title, but lost a chance to make up ground in the Rolex Player of the Year race with a late stumble. As I mentioned before, she finished 9 shots better than Jatanarain, who tied for 43rd, and 17 shots better than Brooke Henderson, who tied for 63rd. With $26,692 she claimed winnings, Cole moves back atop the LPGA money list. She's $3,744 ahead of Jatanarain in winnings. Cole and Jatanarain are scheduled to play twice more the rest of the season, with both playing at next week's Japan Toto Japan Classic and the season-ending CME Tour Group Tour Championship. Jatanarain remains 13 points ahead of Cole in the Rolex Player of the Year race. If Cole doesn't gain any ground on Jatanarain in Japan, she will have to win the season-ending CME Group Tour Championship to win her second straight Rolex Player of the Year title. Jatanarain can clinch the title of the Player of the Year with a victory in Japan. A player must finish among the top 10 in an event to earn Player of the Year points. A victory is worth 30 points, where second place worth 12 points, and third is worth 9. Points are awarded down to a single point for 10th place. Fred Bowman made a hard run early Sunday at TPC Kuala Lumpur, being within 2 shots of the lead, but that double bogey at the 15th and a bogey at 18 cost her some very costly Player of the Year points in this tight race, and we have not seen the end of it.
Yeah, it's going to get tight, and they're coming down to the year. A lot of good stuff planned for on the LPGA Tour right now. Hey, Carlos, history was made on the Champions Tour this week as Tom Pernice won the PowerShares 2QQ Championship in the first ever playoff event in Champions Tour history. He beat Colin Montgomery by a single stroke on Sunday at Sherwood Country Club. Pernice closed with 270 in breezy and rainy conditions, breaking a tie for the lead with Montgomery with an 8-foot birdie putt on the par 4 14th and adding a 15-footer on the par 3 15th. It was the fifth Champions Tour win for Pernice since joining the Over 50 Tour. Only the top 72 on the Champions Tour money list earned invitations to the PowerShares 2QQ, and only the top 54 advanced to the Dominion Cherry Classic this week in Richmond, Virginia. The field will then be cut to 36 for the Charles Schwab Cup Championship in Scottsdale in 2 weeks. We're going to talk more about that later. Pernice earned $305,000 to jump from 32nd to 9th in the standings. But perhaps the biggest news of the week was the withdrawal of Charles Schwab Cup points leader Bernhard Langer. Langer withdrew before the start Friday because of a left knee injury. He has 4 victories for the season and has wrapped up the season money title with $2.7 million. Colin Montgomery moves to number 2 in the Schwab Cup race, with Joe Durant, Miguel Angel Jimenez, and Scott McCarron rounding out the top 5. Another big story on the Champions Tour was the return of Fred Couples. He had missed the past 8 months with a back injury, but returned to competition this week at Sherwood, which is practically in his backyard, so it seemed like a good place to get back to work. Couples posted respectable scores in his first 2 rounds, 68-72, but a 77 on Sunday moved him down 15 spots to finish 237. That 77 on Sunday was also costly for Freddie. He moved down to number 60 in the Schwab Cup and will not move on to Richmond this week. Lee Jansen was the last man in for the second stage of the Charles Schwab Cup playoff. His final round 71 moved him up 12 spots to T25, which was just enough to leave him at number 54. On the other end of the list, missing out on a chance to continue, Brad Bryant dropped from number 53 to number 55 and will not move on. Jeff Hart was in and out and in again and out again, but ultimately finished number 57 and missed his chance to move on. John Daly, Tom Watson, Vijay Singh, Davis Love, and John Cook all ended their Champions Tour seasons this week. Carlos, we're going to talk about the new playoff system a little bit later in the show, so that's all I have for the backspin tonight, sir.
since we're going to talk about that, then we'll talk about Bernhard Langer then. And, of course, everyone wants to know what's going on with him. Right? Didn't he win? We'll talk about that at the practice range. There's a lot to talk about. Hey, we're going to take our first short break, and when we come back, we're going to go for our part of our news. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 news. And Fred, you got the first news as usual. So what's going on? What do you have for us today?
Well, the first thing is that Tiger Woods received a cancellation notice for his Hero World Challenge to be held at the Albany Club in the Bahamas at the beginning of December. Dustin Johnson, number 3 in the world, had originally committed to Tiger's event, but had to withdraw this week to accept an invitation to replace world number 1 Jason Day, who was scheduled to play Rory McIlroy in an exhibition for Battle for the Cause in the Philippines. But Day has to stay home due to rest his ailing back because he's taken the fall off. The match was originally set to pit number 1 Day versus number 2 McIlroy, and it's going to take place at the Pradera Verde Golf and Country Club in Panya, and features an auction to caddy for Rory and Dustin for 9 holes. Rory's just not having much luck with this exhibition thing. This is a second attempt at a head-to-head exhibition for him this year. He had planned to play Ricky Fowler in Detroit, if you remember, earlier this summer until a deal with sponsors fell through. But this one was set up for November 29th, a Day, the number 1 player in the world, whose mother happens to be from the Philippines, and who had family members perish there in the 2013 typhoon. Well, Rory said, it will be a cool match. I'm happy that Dustin wanted to come and compete, come and take part. Obviously, it was going to be Jason, and it would have been special for him with his ties to the Philippines. It's a place I've never been. I've met a lot of Filipino people along the way that are always nice and courteous and welcoming, and I'm looking forward to that hospitality in Manila. DJ said after the announcement, should be a lot of fun. I like playing against Rory, and I've never been to the Philippines. Inquiring minds want to know, will Paulina and the kids accompany DJ to Manila, and will Rory get home in time for the wedding? Stay tuned to the Back 9 Report for more drama, Carlos.
And hey, it's still a great field there with Henrik Stenson, Jimmy Walker, Jordan Spieth, who won in 2014, Patrick Reed, Hideki, Ricky, Justin, Matt Kuchar, Russell Knox, Brent Snedeker, Brooks Koepka, Louis Hyson, Jimmy Holmes, Emiliano Grillo, and Zach Johnson, who had one of the 2 extensions this year, and the other one was offered to Tiger Woods. Wow. I cannot believe it. It was a offered to
what is he, 700 in the world or something?
I don't know. But anyway, you know, let's talk about a very good friend of Tiger Woods. And what a diehard golfer doesn't dream of having his own golf course, right? Well, for his heirness, Michael Jordan, that dream may soon be a reality. The billionaire NBA owner and basketball Hall of Famer, maybe the greatest basketball player of all time, is moving forward with plans for an ultra-exclusive private club in Southeast Florida, this according to a Treasure Coast newspaper's report. Jordan would be the principal owner and has gotten 25 other investors to pony up $1 million apiece for the project.
You're on that list, aren't you, Carl? Did you put in your million for that?
He called me, but that's in Florida. Now I am in Texas.
I understand. You can just jump in the jet, hop over for a round, and fly home for dinner.
Yeah, but no, it's okay. I'm fine here. Jordan is here. You know, it's easier.
Yeah, you and Jordan. Yeah, you. Okay, all right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you understand, right? But anyway, yeah, the good news for Michael is that other investors and the developer. And is that the land has no wetlands or other areas requiring preservation. In other words, it's a blank canvas for whoever would be the architect. The concept behind the development would be end-to-end vision of the golf course from anywhere on the property, a links-inspired look that has become popular in American modern design. The resulting club would be somewhat similar in size to Liberty National in New Jersey, with less than 200 people having membership. The plan submitted to Martin County officials call for a modest clubhouse. Jordan, who's 53 and won 6 NBA championships with the Chicago Bulls during his playing career, becoming one of the most recognizable icons in sports history. While he hasn't had the same success as an owner, his well-timed investment in the Charlotte Hornets thrust him into the billionaire ranks back in 2015. Jordan ranked number 486 in the Forbes list of U.S. billionaires this year with a net worth of $1.14 billion. So Jordan certainly has the means to build his own golf course. He also has a passion. Jordan's obsession with golf is well documented. He has an affinity for playing fast, betting big, and having fun with friends, often clad in cargo shorts and puffing away on a cigar. He once got married on a golf course and regularly plays in celebrity events and charity tournaments. As a member of the 1992 Dream Team, Jordan would play 36 holes a day in Barcelona before taking the basketball court in helping the U.S. to roll to that very great Olympic gold medal. He's been a vice captain twice for the U.S. Ryder Cup team, and over the years has unquestionably become one of golf's most prominent supporters. And soon, Fred, that support will be taken one step further.
Yeah, what I understand, he's going to just have his buddies there, and it's just going to be, you know, he could be able to wear cargo shorts. You know, he got kicked off a course for wearing cargo shorts one time. And, you know, if you want to turn your hat backwards, you can do that. Not going to be the stuffy country club type thing. So good for Michael. He can afford it. Hey, you know, we had announced earlier this year that Phil Mickelson would join Bubba Watson as a brand ambassador for the Greenbrier, which is a nice way to guarantee Bubba and Phil play in the Greenbrier's PGA tournament without paying an interference fee, which is not allowed on the PGA Tour, but it's still kind of sort of like an appearance fee anyway. Well, Jim Justice is entrusting his newest best buddy, Phil Mickelson, with another big project. The restoration of the Greenbrier course after considerable damage was done by Hurricane Matthew. The Greenbrier course is a historic Seth Rayner design, which opened in 1929 and hosted the 1979 Ryder Cup. Carlos, of all the courses at the Greenbrier, I especially enjoyed this classic old-style course. I hope Phil doesn't screw it up. Rayner was a master, and Phil tends to let his ego get in the way, much like Nicklaus did in his early days of golf course design. It is scheduled to update and repaired by Mickelson design team. 8 holes will be renovated and 10 new holes added to the course. I hate that. Current plans call for the new course to open in the spring of 2018. My goal is to stay true to his design concepts while updating the course to the challenge and excite generations to come. Boy, those are huge, huge goals there. Mickelson said, by restoring the Greenbrier to its full glory, we'll help the town and region recover from the devastating flood damage. Mickelson has also done work at La Jolla Country Club, Whisper Rock, and Mickelson Shanghai International. Carlos, I got to say, I love the Greenbrier course. Like I say, it was my favorite there. It was a beautiful, beautiful golf course. I know it was damaged, you know, the trees and stuff from the flooding. Probably some of it got washed away. So I hope they can bring her back and make it look beautiful because it was a great, great golf course before.
Hey, Phil is on demand. I mean, he was the man in the Ryder Cup. On that, he was the leader of that great victory. So he's the man right now. If anybody could do it, it has to be him. So don't worry. Trust him.
If you say so.
I don't know. No, I don't
I believe it. I'll believe it when I see it.
Seeing is believing. That's what they say.
Hey, yeah, okay.
Less than 3 weeks from now, preceding the LPGA season ending event in Naples, Florida, tour officials will announce their 2017 schedule. Bearing a last-minute surprise, the tournament at Lake Merced will not appear on the schedule, and it might be gone for good. Swinging Skirt started its sponsorship of this event in 2014, but as a Taiwan-based nonprofit organization, their intent on growing the game worldwide, its long-term aspirations are to hold a tour event in Taiwan and San Francisco seems like a stopgap. It comes as no surprise then to learn that Swinging Skirts will not return as its title sponsor. The group's 3-year contract ended this year. The LPGA is an ideal fit in the Bay Area, given the region's rich history of women's golf, avid fans, and great courses. Lake Merced, especially, makes sense as an LPGA venue. Sneaky tough, not terribly long, and distinctive to the area. But Bay Area companies historically are reluctant to throw money behind women's tournaments. That's why the event at Black Hawk Country Club in Danville disappeared. And that's why the future of this tournament at Lake Merced teeters in doubt. It's a big financial commitment. Title sponsors run between $3 million to $4 million annually to cover prize money. This year's purse at Lake Merced was $2 million and other costs associated with staging the tournament. Still, the Bay Area is a big market with many thriving corporations. The PGA Tour struck a deal with Safeway to sponsor the annual tournament in Napa, but LPGA officials, much as they did in Danville, are not finding an easy solution in Daly City. Problem here might be the timing with the release of the new schedule just 3 weeks away. And I don't know, but I think they should be working on something from some time ago. We'll see what happens. But as one door might be closing, one has opened. And that is because AliSports from Shanghai, a division of Alibaba Group, is partnering with the LPGA to own an LPGA tournament host annually in mainland China for the next 10 years. The company announced that. The tournament will be a part of LPGA's Fall Asian Swing and will be on the tour schedule in late September or early October. Following 2015, AliSports has also struck deals with the National Football League, FIFA Club World Cup, and International Boxing Association, among others. In September, AliSports served as the presenting sponsor of the 2016 Ringwood LPGA Classic. The tournament owned by AliSports will be held in conjunction with the China Golf Association and the China LPGA Tour. The event is initially scheduled to be played at Ringwood Pine Valley in Changfang District in China, which has previously hosted the Ringwood LPGA Classic 3 times from 2013 to 2016. Fred, disagreement between the LPGA and AliSports is representing China's steadfast commitment to growing the game of golf in the country and across the globe, especially after Shang Shang Fang's great medal in the Olympics and her recent inform. It's definitely gaining some track in China finally.
Yeah, it's kind of a good news, bad news for the LPGA Tour, Carlos. Good news is it's a net zero loss for the LPGA Tour. You know, they lose one tournament, but they pick up another, so that, you know, it's a status quo there. But the bad side of it is they lose Lake Merced, which is a wonderful golf course. Great. It was wonderful to watch there. You've got right around the lake there, you've got Harding Park, you've got Olympic Club there, and Lake Merced. They're all right there together in San Francisco. It was a beautiful backdrop there and great tournament. Feminists really didn't like the Swinging Skirts name on the tournament, which, you know, that's the name of the company, but, you know, that did not go over too well. And then the other bad thing is that we lose a tournament, the women lose a tournament here in the continental United States, and another goes to Asia. But it is a world tour. The LPGA travels the world, and so they go where the money is, and that's where it's at. Hey, Carlos, I love this next story. I don't know if you saw this or not, but Carmel, California high school teenagers found thousands of golf balls on the ocean floor while diving off the Pacific coast near Pebble Beach Golf Club. Alex Weber and Jack Johnson said they removed more than 5,000 golf balls from just one cove in the Carmel Bay below the golf course. They said the entire seafloor is just white with golf balls rolling around. In May, the two started collecting the balls and estimated they've removed about 5,000 so far. The golf balls are in various states of deterioration. Some have been smoothed by the sea. Others are starting to chip. Some of the older balls have split open and their rubber band-like cores are spilling out. Weber has been researching microplastics and the effects they have on marine life. The fish mistake the rubber bands for food and eat it. Many of these balls have that rubber band core, and it unravels, and it looks like spaghetti string. And once this plastic string is consumed, the animals feel like they're full and stop eating, but they end up starving to death. The teens and their parents contacted the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary and the Pebble Beach Company. Golf balls don't belong in the ocean. They don't belong in the marine sanctuary. But in terms of marine debris, it's not one that we categorize as problematic, the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary Superintendent, Paul Michael, said. He added, golf balls are not as bad as other plastics like plastic bags. Nonetheless, the sanctuary wants to see them cleaned up and has committed to forming a plan with the Pebble Beach Company. Pebble Beach is also committed to help with the problem once it was brought to their attention by the teens. The two groups, the Marine Sanctuary and Pebble Beach, they're working together to form a plan, and they'll include an initial cleanup and then annual or semi-annual cleanups to take care of future balls that miss the mark and end up in the Pacific. A representative said, you know, we've had decades of scientific researchers, recreational divers out off the coast, and no one has brought this to our attention. It's really these two students who have discovered something, and we are really quite proud of them. Pebble Beach rewarded the teenagers' efforts with a pair of $500 scholarships to the Island School, a high school marine science and sustainability-based study abroad program in the Bahamas. I want to go to the Bahamas, Carlos. I'd like to go there. You know, just as it is written, Carlos, the children shall lead them.
Oh, if you go to the Bahamas, just let me know so I can go with you. I've been there. Oh, my goodness. It's incredible.
I was there years and years and years ago to Freeport. The beaches were unbelievable. The sand was white, the water was blue, the sky was amazing. It was pretty nice.
Well, the best way to go there is to take a cruise, and you can spend like 3 days in the Bahamas and two different islands and be there in Atlantis and all that. And oh my goodness.
I need to go visit some golf course in the Bahamas for some golf travel. If anybody's listening wants me to come down, just give me a shout. I'll jump on a plane.
You know, the last thing I would think about being in the Bahamas is playing golf.
I'm just sitting there
on the beach or something.
Yeah, that's right.
I can't.
You know, I have to tell you, though, before we get away from this, I was so mad when I went there. You know, we only had like 3 days. And, of course, you know, I had to fly into Miami and the luggage had to get transferred. And, of course, my luggage and my golf clubs did not make it to the Bahamas. So I missed the first day of golf. That wasn't a big deal back then. And so I did get to play one day, but it really made me mad that I missed the first day. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt the show for that, but I just got to get that
off. I can tell you that you next time, do what I'm telling you. Go on a cruise. You can take your golf clubs with you, You are never going to miss your luggage. It's going to be with you. And you can, they even have this tour for golf as well. So you can go there. I'll go to the beach and we'll talk about it afterwards. And
I just have one question with that though.
Yeah.
Does that requires being on a boat though?
Yes, it does.
I hate this.
It's not a boat.
Sorry.
I mean, this is a big boat. Huge boat.
I know they're a big boat. But see, when you're on a boat, you can't jump in a car and go for a drive, right? I mean, it just...
Yes, you can. You can, because if you go to the island and then rent a car, you can jump into a car. Well, let's wrap up our Part 5 news. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we have our VIG. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back 9 Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIG, our very important guest of the week. His name is Joshua Jacobs. He's the CEO of TGA, which is an acronym for Teach, Grow, Achieve. The company was founded in 2003 and provides an innovative way for children to become involved in golf in before school and after school programs. It has grown to become the largest provider of individualistic youth sports programs being offered at schools, community centers, and golf courses. Mr. Jacobs is going to tell us more about his method of bringing golf to millions of children around the U.S. Fred, send this interview for us.
Yeah, first of all, before we play this, Carlos, I have to apologize to everybody. I messed up. I didn't get this edited. There's a couple of blips in there. I had a coughing fit. I'm sorry. Before we play it, I didn't get it edited before I got it to you. It's all my fault. I had one of these senior moments. Sorry, folks. But the information, just listen to the information because it's really good stuff. Mr. Jacobs started this company back in 2003. They've grown. They have franchises. They're all across the United States. It's a great program for kids to learn to play the game. Gives them a nice program for community centers, for schools, for all kinds of things, camps. It's a good program. And go ahead and run the tape, Carlos. Thank you.
Okay, let's play it.
We are happy to be talking with Joshua Jacobs, the CEO of TGA Premier Junior Golf. He founded TGA, an innovative educational sports training model for young athletes, in 2003 and is now franchising these programs throughout the country. Josh, thanks for joining us today.
Fred, how are you?
I'm great. I'm here in, I don't know, I'm here in Toledo, Ohio. I'm looking at my window. It's sunshiny, but it's cool. But I'm thinking about going out and maybe playing a little golf here later on. So,
not a bad idea. I'm in LA, and it's a balmy 72 today. So we got that opportunity as well.
That's nice. Hey, Josh, could you give our listeners a little background on what TGA is and what these letters stand for?
Absolutely. Well, TGA stands for Teach, Grow, Achieve. And what we do is we make golf available and accessible to masses in communities. Really what makes TGA unique is that we bring the sport to the people, to the kids, to the parents in places like middle schools, elementary schools, pre-K, child care centers. And we bring them a program that is really different than anything else out there, in the sense that we incorporate life lessons and education subjects and STEAM labs as it pertains to the sport of golf. STEAM is science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. So not only are our participants learning golf, but they're also learning the great life lessons that it has, as well as really partaking in experiments that show them how the game, how it works and the different sciences behind it.
Now, are you placing these in, like, in the phys ed programs? Are you placing them in the after-school programs? How do these work best?
So our program concentrates primarily on after-school programs or out-of-school time programs. You'll see a lot of trends around the country now where these kids are so busy after school that they're starting to ask for before-school programs. So, no, we're not concentrating on PE programs. It's the before- and after-school programs because it's very convenient for the parents. It's easy to drop their kid off an hour early to school or pick them up an hour later, and we do everything right at the schools. We have our curriculums that can be done anywhere. So it can be in gymnasiums, blacktops, in classrooms. It can be done on fields. We've created something that not only is accessible and can be brought anywhere, but also can be implemented in any place within a location.
Excuse me. I've been holding that the whole time. My head's about to explode here.
I get it.
You obviously have to do some training, some teaching. You're franchising this program, but you have teachers all across the country using this program at the schools and after school or preschool kind of programs. How do your teachers become certified? How do they get involved with your program?
Yeah, we have about 1,700 coaches around the country that are teaching these programs. We're in about 3,600 schools and different community centers around the country. So they get involved with us because we place local advertisements in the communities that we service, and they learn about the opportunity to give back to the community, really impact these kids through golf. And we put them through a pretty extensive training process. There's a five-hour online training program, and then there's also in-person training as well that they go through along with the experience of partaking in the programs before they're actually hired. We need to make sure, and we really got to make sure that these kids are introduced to the sport of golf properly. And we all know the barriers to entry for the sport. So if it's not portrayed in a fun, educational, and exciting way for these kids, if that first touch isn't a positive one, then we're actually working against the sport rather than working on growing it.
Yeah, it has to be fun for kids to stay involved and to keep their attention and keep them doing it. Now, there are different junior programs, such as the First Tee, PGA Junior League, Drive, Chip, and Putt, and Youth on Course. How does your program differentiate or fit in or complement these other programs?
Well, we're extremely complementary to all of those programs, and if you look at what each one does best, each one of those has a direct niche. So the First Tee, their niche is really the PE programs, the National School Program, which is a fantastic program out there around the country. And then they have their chapters mainly in the under-resourced areas that they service these kids and really impact lives. PGA Junior League, another great initiative from the PGA of America, more competitive / recreational leagues. And then you've got your Drive, Chip, and Putt, which is that great collaboration between Augusta National, PGA, LPGA, I think, is involved in that as well. And it's a competitive aspect. And then Youth on Course really giving these kids the opportunity to play for a really low cost. And so where we fit in is we're kind of right in between the First Tee and all the other programs. We become a feeder system into those other programs. The First Tee kind of feeds into our programs, into our after-school or before-school program, which TGA's program is a little bit more comprehensive than a PE program, and the kids are more opt to stay in golf longer because they've got a number of weeks under their belt with our programs rather than just 1 week of a solid PE program. So we're extremely complementary. If you put those all together, you really could have a very consistent player pathway for when kids are introduced to the sport and they can move through it and then get to that ultimate goal of from an industry standpoint, getting them on the course, get them playing, and get them playing with their family.
Now, when you first came up with this program, you did a lot of research. How did you come up with the Youth Sports franchise model, and how is it impacting the industry as a whole?
Yeah, when we first started, we launched TGA in Los Angeles in 2003, and we didn't franchise till 2007. But, you know, in that research that you described, we really found that, you know, number one, bringing golf into schools wasn't really prevalent. And if you think about it, every other sport is on the menu of activities for kids in school, so why shouldn't golf be? And then the other thing that we found is there really isn't a ton of opportunity for small business ownership within the golf world, you know, especially if you want to grow the game. At the time, from a PGA, LPGA professional standpoint, they weren't owning the golf shops or the cart barns anymore, and there were a lot more management companies that were up and coming. And so there really weren't a lot of ownership opportunities. And so what we saw is we had created this delivery system that could bring golf to communities, and not only do we run the introductory programs in the schools and at the community centers, but we also transition these kids and create partnerships with golf courses to get them to camps and clinics and play days with both themselves and their families. So we really provide that all-encompassing bridge from introductory and schools to recreational and golf courses. And so it really screamed franchise at me because it gave people an opportunity to own their own business, build equity, grow the sport, and impact their community. And, you know, research shows that vested entrepreneurs who are delivering programs are going to have a greater success than volunteer organizations. So we saw this as an opportunity, and to date, we feel like we're impacting the industry in many ways, most notably, I think, at the golf course level. We're getting more people playing golf. 65% of our participants have never played golf before, and neither of their families. And so it gives us that one-up to really bring that new crop and grow the pie to get them to the golf courses. And we all know where golf courses are right now. They need a boost in traffic, and they need a boost in revenue.
Yeah. Let me go back here to a point you made earlier, too, that, of course, every parent wants their child to become responsible adults. The TGA system, you talked about life skills such as respect, honesty, perseverance, and sportsmanship. How are those taught through your program?
So every one of our students gets a student handbook. It's about 60 pages, and it details everything from the way our classes run to rules of golf to the history of golf to these life lessons that we're discussing and how they pertain to the sport of golf. Every single one of our classes begins with kids shaking hands. It actually ends with kids shaking hands, too. But really that beginning shaking hands, like they do on the first tee of every tournament, that really symbolizes that the program has begun. And then throughout the class, when we have station-based learning, so these kids are never standing around in lines, one of those stations is always a life lesson station, so they can take what they're learning that day and apply it to things at home. And that really connects the dots for these parents, that these kids are learning in the school, this program that they're taking, and then they're bringing it home with them.
So what I see then is what I'm hearing is that, you know, you are one of the only introductory programs like this in the industry, and you've become a leading introductory golf program utilizing this youth sports franchise model. It vests entrepreneurs, whether they're PGA, LPGA professionals, or some other teaching professional at the grassroots level, and you're going into schools and into community centers right where the kids are, and they need some further learning, and it gets them involved in the game of golf.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes down to it, it's a business, and you're looking at what is the value proposition for parents? Because kids are so overscheduled these days, and there's so many activities for them to do. What is the value proposition for these parents to select golf versus anything else, any other sport or any instrument that they're playing? What is the value proposition to get them to put their kids' time into our great sport? And so you have to have a very high value proposition, and then you have to put it on the menu of activities in places where some of these other activities are. And I saw that as a very unique opportunity for us to deliver a great program that's as much about enrichment and education as it is about golf. But inherently, the industry benefits because they are learning golf. But it really comes down to that value proposition. Why are they selecting a camp that has golf in it rather than a camp that's a sleepaway camp with no golf? Where is that value proposition? What are we providing these kids, and what is the benefit for the parents to involve them in our great sport?
Outstanding. We've been talking with Joshua Jacobs, the CEO of TGA, Premier Golf and Tennis. If anyone is interested in learning more about their program or bringing a franchise to their community, you can contact them at playtga.com or at franchisetga.com. Again, that's play, P-L-A-Y, TGA.com is the main website. Joshua, thanks again for talking with us today. Is there any final thoughts that you would like to mention before we sign off today?
Go Indians.
I love that one. Josh, hang on just a second. I'm going to stop tape and then we can talk.
Okay.
Carlos, you got your mute on? Carlos. Well, while we're waiting for Carlos to come back, that wraps up the very important guest of the evening, Joshua Jacobs, the CEO of TGA. They have a unique program which helps teach children the golf program. They provide it at after-school programs, also in community centers. It's available for camps. Great program. Visit playtga.com for more information or to contact Josh and find out more about his program. Carlos, we're ready to move over into the practice range, and I'm going to just continue on here until I hear from you.
Hello.
You're back.
I got dropped. My call got dropped, so I had to go back.
I closed out the interview with Josh,
okay,
and I was just ready to start the practice range. So if you want to take a break before we do that, you go right ahead. I haven't started yet.
Yeah, I just wanted to let people know before we go that to that about Josh's point. I had here written down, and, you know, there are about 3 million junior golfers ages 6 to 17 in the U.S. They represent right now some 10% of golfers, which accounts for about 6% of 18-hole equivalent rounds. They play a lot shorter rounds, and they represent about 1 of every 3 beginners. You know, this is a time when the industry struggles induce eye-rolling headlines like golf once again finds itself in the rough. Junior play is, for the most part, a success history. The game growth initiative that has been precipitated by declining play and excessive course building have in many places spawned innovative programs designed to reach kids at the level and make it fun. That is exactly what they're doing. They are also, they have introduced clubs that are designed to make it easier for beginning and experienced junior to hit the ball solidly and produce better results. And these clubs were created by a 30-year golf industry manufacturing guru, which is Russ Cavinge of Plus One Sports, and has worked with high-profile manufacturers like Nicholas Golf Club and Spalding. So, you know, they're doing a lot of great things, and that's a program that, you know, like he said, is stands between the first tee and the other programs, and it's one that should be looked at, and I wish him the best of success there.
So yeah, those are really great points. Thank you. That was good stuff, Carlos.
With that, we'll take our short break, and when we come back, we'll have our practice reach.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range for every week, Fred and I pick a topic, and each of us will take a swing at it. And this week, we have, hey, what else? And there are a couple of races at the end of the season for the Champions Tour and the European Tour Playoffs. And, of course, the race to the CME Globe that starts in a couple of weeks. So we have all that you need to know about them. Fred, take the first crack at them.
Yeah, we alluded to it earlier in the show when we were talking about the Champions Tour and the European Tour a little bit. But the Champions Tour and the European Tour playoffs are both now in process. And as you mentioned, the LPGA Tour's race with CME Globe is going to start in a couple of weeks. The European Tour decided to go ahead with the first leg of their three-event final series to be held in Turkey at the Royal Max course designed by Colin Montgomery. This one attacks near Antalya, which is right near Bolek, where the golf course is, prompted a U.S. travel advisory to the region and will hurt one of the crown jewels of the European Tour. The U.S. government issued this travel advisory for American citizens to leave Turkey because of suspected terrorist activity. They are pulling the staff and families from the American consulate in Istanbul. European Tour CEO Keith Pelley flew to Turkey on Friday last week to assess security and apparently was pleased. He announced the tournament would go on as planned, and he was able to convince Race to Dubai sponsors to keep the $7 million purse in place in spite of the lack of some big names. Patrick Reed was scheduled to compete in the European Tour Race to Dubai in Turkey, but decided to withdraw while he was playing last week at the WGC, HSBC. And he's headed back to Houston for a week off. Rory McIlroy, the defending Race to Dubai champion, Henrik Stenson, Shane Lowry, Martin Kaymer, and Rafa Cabrera-Cabello have also withdrawn this week. The first two events of the final series, the Turkish Airlines Open and the Nedbank Golf Challenge in South Africa, offer $7 million purses, while the DP World Championship hands out $8 million. In addition, the top 15 players are competing for a share of $7.5 million of a bonus pool, and $1.5 million of that goes to the Race to Dubai winner. It's, as we mentioned last week, it's not the $65 million that gets split up in the PGA Tour's FedEx Cup, but with a total of $22 million in prize money and $7.5 million of bonus pool money, that's a total of $29.5 million for 3 weeks' work here on the European Tour. That's a pretty good deal for them. Henrik Stenson, as you mentioned, overtook Danny Willett last week in the Race to Dubai standings. Rory McIlroy, Alex Noren, and Tyrrell Hatton round out the top five. You know, Carlos, this really is a shame. The event brings in a ton of income to the area. Plus, it is a beautiful spot on the north shore of the Mediterranean Sea. It has a huge effect to the travel industry of Turkey, and I just hate it like the devil that all that activity is going over there with Turkey, Syria, and the surrounding area. Meanwhile, the Champions Tour played their first playoff event this week. The Charles Schwab Cup playoffs started with the PowerShares QQQ Championship, where 72 players earned spots in the event, and as we mentioned earlier, was won by Tom Pernice. The field has been cut to 54 for the next stop this week at the Dominion Charity Classic in Richmond, Virginia. After that, only the top 36 qualifiers will be invited to the Charles Schwab Cup Championship at Desert Mountain in Scottsdale, Arizona. The first two events in the series, last week and this week in Virginia, are offering $2 million purses, and the season finale at Desert Mountain has a $2.5 million purse. So, you know, there's, what, $6.5 million in three tournaments to get split up? In addition, the top five finishers in the Charles Schwab Cup final rankings earn a nice little bonus. First place gets $1 million, second $500,000, third $300,000,
Fourth is 200, and boy, if you're fifth, you only get $100,000. Poor guy. So, Carlos, we've got some playoffs.
Playoffs? We're not talking playoffs.
But we are talking playoffs on the Champions Tour and the European Tour. There's a bunch of money on the table. Guys are playing, although guys have opted out of the Turkish Airlines Open, but they'll be playing next week in South Africa, Carlos.
They will, and let me tell you, in the Champions Tour, like you mentioned, 36 players will advance to the Charles Schwab Cup Championships, and this is just like the FedEx Cup, but in the Champions Tour, basically, because points will be assigned there and tiered based on the current play of standings. For example, the first will be 2,000, the second will be 1,500. You know, every player will have a mathematical chance of winning the Charles Schwab Cup, and one that has everyone concerned is Bernhard Langer. As you all know, he withdrew on Thursday from the first event of our Chess QQQ Championship because of a lefty injury. So he withdrew before the round. As you all know, he's a two-time defending Charles Schwab Cup champion. And now he started the playoffs, come to standings with over 2.6, almost 2.7 million points. He had said he recently re-aggravated that injury at home doing his usual spinning routine. He had an MRI on Monday and wasn't physically able to play any practice rounds ahead of his 12:17 p.m. starting time on Friday. And he said, you know, if I'm going to do long-term damage, the last thing I want to do is try and play and do further damage. And then I can play next week or the following week. So we don't know right now if he's going to be still playing. At least I haven't gotten any news. But even with that withdrawal, Langer remains atop the Charles Schwab Cup standings, entering the second playoff event, which is the Dominion Charity Classic this weekend. The winner of the Power Chairs QQQ Championship received $300,000 and 600,000 points. And Langer right now is leading his nearest challenger, which is Miguel Angel Jimenez, by more than 1.1 million points. Like I said, he has amassed almost $2.7 million in earnings this season, and which includes 4 victories and 16 top 10s in 19 starts. And he's by $1.172 million ahead of Jimenez on the money list, which mathematically locked him up with his 8th money title in the last 9 years, because only $975,000 remain in first place checks. So at least he's assured of the money list title, but we'll see if he can earn the hat trick on the Schwab Cup championship. Right now, the only thing that seems that can stop Bernhard Langer is his knee. So we'll keep you posted as we know more about it. And on the European Tour, it's very sad what you mentioned about Turkey. Really, what's going on there, it's almost like Syria and Iraq are competing over the Turks' attention, you know, and just when all eyes are set on Mosul, the situation in northern Syria escalated again and got this problem, which is we're targeted by the Turkish airstrike. So it's unfortunate that this is happening, but Rory McIlroy right now seems to be the one most affected by it, because he needed more than anything to be on all three. The only player that's going to be scheduled to play all three final series events is Danny Willett. Stenson will be joining his Ryder Cup teammate in the Red Bank Golf Challenge in Sun City, so he won't be there as well. Depending on exchange rates, the season-ending DP World Tour Championship in Dubai is set to offer around $1.2 million. Points to the winner, so only two tournaments will remain. And Danny, if he has a great outing in Turkey, could really take a very good lead towards that end goal of the season. We'll see what happens, but definitely Henrik Stenson, who plays excellent at this time of the year, he has played maybe the best of anybody else in Dubai, so somehow he has some of the best chances to win right now. So, Fred, anything else you would like to add to this before we close the practice range?
No, just that we're down to the end of the season. You know, these playoffs have come in. They've all kind of copied the FedEx Cup in some way, shape, or form.
You know, the European Tour just has three. The Champions Tour just has three. You know, you said, you know, you're going to talk here a little bit about the FedEx Cup is going to stay with four. We're going to change some of that around a little bit next year. But yeah, they're all coming up with something. It adds a little bit something at the end of the year. They throw a little bit more money. It's a good deal for the players.
It's a very, very good deal for them any time. And I think that's why, like you mentioned earlier, Rory got that little check of $10 million. So he said, it's okay. Those guys need it more than me right now. I already have my wedding and everything else paid with those $10 million. So he can afford that. He can afford to take the time off. Well, we're going to close now the practice range and start our final parts, and I'm going to start talking about Akushnet Holdings, which is the parent company of Golf Brands, Titleist, and FootJoy. It raised $329 million by offering 19.3 million shares in its IPO this past week. Shares were priced at $17 to open, below the projected range of 21 to 24, which could have brought in more than $463 million. The stock was listed on the New York Stock Exchange under the ticker symbol GOLF, which is quite fitting for a company that produces the sport's most recognizable and ubiquitous ball in the Titleist Pro V1. The lower pricing of the IPO is likely indicative of some concerns about the golf industry as a whole. Back in August, as you might remember, opted to get out of the golf equipment business and focus on apparel instead, while TaylorMade's parent company, Adidas, is seeking to sell off its golf properties. Yet, Akushnet executives and others are more accurate in pointing to a natural market correction in the industry following a boom in participation, course construction, and television ratings. Also, I have to mention that the PGA Tour's second FedEx Cup playoff event has a new name. It's going to be the Dell Technologies Championship. The Boston Area Tournament, which traditionally has a Monday Labor Day finish, was previously known as the Deutsche Bank Championship. The renaming of the event came 1 month after Dell EMC, a longtime tournament supporter and sponsor, was introduced as its new title sponsor. Dell EMC is part of Dell Technologies and is based here in Boston, so it was fitting for them. Next year, tournaments will be played at TPC Boston from September 1st to September 4th. And finally, TPC Four Seasons Resort is down to its final year as being the host of the AT&T Byron Nelson Trinity Forest Golf Club, the recently constructed link-style private course designed by Bill Coore and Ben Crenshaw, will now host a PGA Tour event in 2018. TPC Four Seasons Las Colinas was originally set to be the host of the tournament through 2018, but the two came to a mutual agreement to end the contract 1 year early. An official announcement was made Wednesday at the Trinity Forest, who played just 2 weeks ago, and where Jordan Spieth, who also owns the course record, made an appearance. His swing coach, Cameron McCormick, is the new PGA Director of Instruction of the facility. So we'll be seeing a lot of Jordan Spieth on that facility.
So you're joining Trinity Forest. That's the reason you didn't join. You didn't put the million up for Tigers. You're going to be there in Dallas at Trinity Forest. Is that the deal?
That's right. That's right. You got me. Trinity Forest.
You and Jordan
on the road here.
Yeah.
Cameron is now the PGA Director of Instruction. You know,
Hey. Remember that little golf trip President Obama took to Florida in 2013 to play a few holes with Tiger Woods? Well, it cost the American taxpayer a cool $3.6 million. You know, I could have helped the president take a great buddy's trip for a lot less, Carlos. Stanford is hosting an event at the exclusive Cypress Point on the Monterey Peninsula in California for only the second time. And in another rare occurrence, four balls and foursomes will make their way into a college golf event. The Cypress Point Classic begins on Monday at the famed Pebble Beach, California layout designed by Alistair McKenzie. It's a 54-hole event. It's hosted by Stanford, as I mentioned. And, you know, it's going to be a little different, but, man, those guys are so lucky. Eight top college teams are going to compete. Stanford, of course, Wake Forest, USC, Georgia, Georgia Tech, UCLA, Alabama, and California. Stanford head coach Conrad Ray said the event is inspired by the book, The Match, the Mark Frost book, which recounts the famed four-ball match at Cypress between Ben Hogan, Byron Nelson, and amateurs at the time, Harvey Ward and Ken Venturi. Cypress Point has such history, Ray told the media. We're excited the club is supporting the event as well as college and amateur golf. Stanford did host this event back in 2012, so it's the second time it's been done, and you know, that's good stuff. Good to play Cypress Point for anybody. Carlos, as we were doing the show, ESPN was airing the 30-30 episode about John Daly called Hit It Hard. I did watch the trailer. The first 10 minutes of the show is a review of Daly's improbable 1991 PGA Championship win at Crooked Stick, and I have to say that was very well done. If you're a golf fan but not necessarily a John Daly fan, you still may want to watch this. You know, it's pretty well done. 30-30 always does a pretty good job. If you missed it here tonight, you can set your DVR. It's going to re-air early Wednesday morning during the night tonight, 2:30 a.m. on ESPN. So if you want to catch that. And, Carlos, there was another thing. While we're talking about ESPN, there was an article today from OutkickTheCoverage.com. The reports that ESPN has been losing an average of 300,000 viewers monthly for the past couple of years. Plus, ESPN experienced their worst loss ever in October with a decline in subscribers of 621,000. You know, cable providers pay ESPN $7 per subscriber for their broadcast rights, which that's a loss of $4.3 million in gross revenue for ESPN every month. In turn, though, ESPN pays the NFL $1.9 billion. They pay the NBA $1.4 billion, another $700 million to Major League Baseball. In total, ESPN doles out over $7 billion to various sports leagues for the exclusive rights to air their programming. ESPN currently has approximately 90 million subscribers. At $7 each, that's $630 million per month, or $7.5 billion per year. In addition, they collect over $1.5 billion, $1.8 billion, something like that, from advertising income. They bring in about $9 billion a year. Broadcasting rights, $7.3 billion, another $1.5 billion to operate. That doesn't give them a real healthy profit margin. It gets a little thin there. So, you know, interesting stuff, Carlos. People, you know, we've been covering this story, talking about it for a couple weeks. I'm sure we're going to continue to talk about it. But people are dropping their cable subscriptions and channels like ESPN that count on that revenue. They're all looking for different ways to recoup it and keep the money train going.
Yeah, that's what we've been saying. And right now, like you mentioned, they have almost 90 million subscribers. That's down from 101 million that they had 5 years ago. And given that rate, lost subscribers appear to be accelerating. If we're conservative and just project, let's say, ESPN loses $3 million subscribers a year for the next 5 years, then the worldwide leader in sports will have just 73 million subscribers in 2021. And at that point, they would be roughly breaking even with the amount of money they're paying for sports rights and the amount of money ESPN brings in via the subscriber revenue. We have said this before, you know, the older people are the ones who are more likely to subscribe to cable than younger people. So you can all so-called the cord nevers and the cord cutters, right? The cord nevers would be those younger people that would never cross their mind on subscribing to cable and satellite bundle. And the cord cutters are the ones that are right now tired of, you know, the
upheaval costs, and they're just cutting off. And one thing that I will say that is working against ESPN right now is that, hey, they are offering everything through their app. So everything is free. Why would I want to have a subscription if I can just take my phone and take my tablet and or my computer, my laptop, and see it? All I need is internet access. So, you know, I understand that you have to try to be mobile to be with this the younger crowd and all that, but that is paying also against their subscription. And one part, they're losing money, and they're getting more maybe viewers through their app and their mobile their mobility, but they are definitely losing dollars, income, revenue. So that's something that all TV providers, all stations, everything, the cable providers have to start looking at and see. This is going to be a big change, and we haven't finished talking about this for sure.
Yeah, and because it spills over to golf, that's the reason we're talking about it. You know, the PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour are looking at new television contracts coming up in a couple of years, or even talking about opting out of their current deals to set up new ones, and or do they change? Do they start producing their own content? You know, so there's a lot going on here, and we keep talking about this to give our listeners the background so they have an understanding of really what's going on in the industry, Carlos.
Yeah, and I'm sorry to inform you, you know, Addison Russell welcomed Dan Otero to the mound in the top of the third inning with a grand slam in his second pitch. So your Indians are down 7-0 in the top of the fourth. I'm sorry.
I've been watching. I have it on mute here. I'm going to.
I know. Looks like we noticed a deep, a lower in your voice after that grand slam. So I know. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to bring it up.
I tell you what. You know what? Tomlin really wasn't pitching that badly. You know, he really wasn't.
Yeah.
They got their hitting shoes on tonight. The Cubbies are hitting the ball, man. They are smoking it.
Hey, but let me tell you one point about this. You said that they got more ratings than the Cowboys and Eagles, but this is two cities that are really hungry. Have
yeah.
a championship so many years.
Yeah.
This is a different
yeah.
thing. It's not your average
yeah.
Yankees or LA or anything. That would be something not new. But this, the chance for either Cleveland
yeah.
or
yeah.
Chicago Cubs to win
yeah.
the World Series, that is history. That is huge,
yeah.
and that is why I think it's really had so many
yeah, but for
viewers.
The rest of the,
basically, it's a great
for the rest of the country to buy into that, though. That's what's amazing. Like you say, if it's New York and L.A., that's one thing. But for the rest of the country to care about Cleveland or even Chicago, it's still that's amazing to me.
It's because it's the it's something different. And you see this, everybody now trying to see who's going to pick the winner, right? I say Chicago. No, it's going to be Cleveland. And that's what's getting everywhere I go, I see everybody talking about it. And it's incredible because it's catching on. And I think it's the best that has happened to baseball for a long time. I mean, it's better than these two reached the World Series than any of the others because it really has picked up some interest to teams that are playing great, and wow, great for them. And sorry about that, you're 7-0 down the race.
Well, we're going to a game seven.
About now.
I get one more good night of baseball yet before the season's over.
We'll see. Hey, we talk about everything and anything, golf and any sport. Just bring it up. We'll have it for you. And with that, we wrap up another week of the Backman Report presented by eDraft.com. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Josh Jacobs, President and CEO of PGA. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. And if you haven't done so, hey, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.